D-Maze, Fingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Fingan here with you, joining us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, our friend Mitch Light from The Athletic to discuss college football. Mitch, a big game this past weekend between Tennessee and Alabama. Tennessee gets the win. I want to discuss the fallout for both of those teams coming off of that game. Alabama, a two-loss team before November for the first time since 2007, which was Nick Saban's first year at the university. Has Alabama played itself out of the college football playoff because of the loss to Tennessee?
No. Obviously did not help. Couple things Alabama has going for it. Obviously, it would behoove Alabama if Tennessee keeps playing well, and that's not a bad loss. But that win over Georgia, I think what Georgia did at Texas was the best thing for Alabama. We don't really know how to talk about the college football bubble like we do college basketball, because we've been following the college basketball bubble for, you know, ever since they went to 64 teams. But I always say, like, if you're on the bubble, what have you done that differentiates yourself if you're a college basketball team? Same thing here. If Alabama is comparing itself to other bubble teams, no other team will have a win as good as over Georgia, in theory. Now, caveats left and right. If there are three losses, does that trump a one-loss Big 12 team that has nothing close to as many good wins as Alabama does, but only has one loss? So the answer is no, it doesn't, but it obviously puts them in a really tough situation. And for Tennessee, it's obviously a huge boost. Losing that would have been really tough. And the bigger thing for Tennessee is, like, if you were assessing their playoff hopes at halftime, you're like, playoffs, like, just they need to start playing good football after, you know, three straight had first half of not scoring. Well, they flipped that script in the second half, and now they can rightfully talk about playoff because they have that good win and they clearly played much better in the second half.
Vanderbilt hosts Texas on Saturday. I was hopeful that Texas would beat Georgia just so that we would have the opportunity to watch Vanderbilt host another number one team because of what we saw a few weeks ago with Vanderbilt taking down Alabama. I haven't seen the line on this game.
18.5.
Okay, 18.5, which is smaller than the line was for the Alabama game, which I believe was 21 or 22.5. But based on what we saw from Texas last week, you know, a rough game for them. You hope, you know, they're hoping for a bounce back performance. What are you expecting this weekend on West End when Texas visits Vanderbilt?
Yeah, the best team that Vanderbilt has played this year. They're better than Alabama. I don't know if they're more talented. They're very, very, both teams are really talented. I would say Texas is probably more talented, and they're clearly playing better. They are good across the board. They've had a lot of injuries at running back. They're not necessarily explosive there, but they've got big-time wide receivers. I know the offensive line had trouble with Georgia, but there's very few teams that can present those types of problems with the edge rushers that Georgia does. But from, like, a recruiting standpoint, their offense and defensive lines are just absolutely stacked. So this is a really, really good team that's coming off a bad showing. You know, obviously Quinn Ewers has looked, as that game at Michigan was as good as a quarterback has played this year against a quality defense. But I don't know if he wasn't healthy or whatever. He just started seeing ghosts. He clearly was not very good for the first half against Georgia. So it's going to be a very, very tall order for Vanderbilt again, which has already won three games this year as a double-digit underdog. So that should not faze them. But they're going to have to keep doing the things that they've done this year, is not turn the ball over, win the field position battle, possess the ball, you know, control the clock like they have. They know the formula, but can they follow it and execute it again? That's going to be the biggest challenge.
We're talking with Mitch Light of The Athletic discussing college football. Now, Mitch, this is just a quick question for you before I get into my other question with Alabama. If this thing plays out for Vanderbilt and Clark Lee, and say, you know, they get into a bowl game, win six, possibly even seven, I believe they can. They still have a chance to win seven games. Should he be mentioned in serious consideration for Coach of the Year in the SEC because of where this team was expected to be, and then they go out and they beat a ranked Virginia Tech team, they go out and they take Missouri to the brink of, you know, an overtime, and they should have won that game, double overtime, I believe. And then they come back and they beat an Alabama team. Depending on how they look against Texas, I think they got a shot at beating Texas. No one thought they had a shot at beating Alabama. So I'm going to say they got a shot at beating Texas as well. If indeed they can pull out, let's just say, 7 wins, should he be in true serious contention for Coach of the Year?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I thought you were going to ask National Coach of the Year, which he would be too. Right now, you know, Frank Cignetti with what they're doing in Indiana has to be in that mix. I'll say, you know, is the thing about that, the thinking through the teams, if Texas A&M happens to win the league or finishes second and gets the conference championship game, there'd be a lot of thoughts from Mike Elko for Coach of the Year. But clearly, you know, a lot of it is always with Coach of the Year defying or beating the odds, doing better than people think. And the fact that they've already won 3 games as a double-digit underdog tells you he's already done that. So still a lot to be played, but clearly he would be in the mix.
Okay, now as far as Alabama, I look at them not so much because DeBoer, I know he's feeling it down in Alabama right now. But if you look at it, if I'm an Alabama fan, I would be more disappointed in how their defense has played. They've given up 40 points, 25 points, 24 points, and we're talking about within the last 3 weeks. We're not even talking about the Georgia game where Georgia came back and they scored 34 points and almost won that game. So just looking at it from that standpoint, listen, he only has 2 losses. He's still in contention for the playoffs. But I'm just looking at their defense. Like, Bama fans, they just have to be pulling their hair out, not necessarily because, you know, they have 2 losses, but the way their defense has been playing.
Yeah, in conference play, so they played 4 games. They are averaging they're allowing 5.9 yards per play, which ranks 12th. I guarantee you that is the worst in conference play at Alabama since before Nick Saban got there. I could pull it up. I don't have it, but their third down defense has been bad. I mean, that was the problem in the Vanderbilt game and the South Carolina game. I thought they were fortunate to have, you know, in the first half against Tennessee. Tennessee just missed some throws. Nico missed some throws, some guys who were wide open there. So I think they took a step forward probably in the Tennessee game, like big picture, but you're totally right. You know, I thought Kane Womack, the defensive coordinator they hired, who's the head coach at South Alabama, was a good hire. I mean, he'd been done well as a head coach, really good reputation. I'm not going to sit here and say I've watched all the film and can tell you why they're struggling, but the results are the results, and they have not been good enough for Alabama for the personnel they have.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, talking college football. Mitch, does how Alabama, like if you're Tennessee, it seems like you want Alabama to play great from here on out, because I'm looking at their schedule and I'm thinking if they were to lose one more, if they were to lose a competitive game at Georgia and that's it, they'll be one of these bubble teams. You use this, and I was thinking about this when you came on. I feel like there's going to be a lot of 2-loss teams that are going to throw their hat in the ring and say, we should be an at-large, and it's going to be really tough to differentiate those teams.
Yeah, and I did not come up with this phrase, and I'm not trying to be, you know, a smart you-know-what, but, like, the thing about a 12-team playoff, there's 12 teams. You know, we get it here at The Athletic when we, you know, Stu Mandel posts his updated bracket every Sunday, and, you know, God forbid, listen, Notre Dame, like as the 12th seeder on the bubble, people are like, yeah, they lost to Northern Illinois. How could they be there? How could this team be there? They're terrible. Well, you need 12 teams, and then the teams that are on the bubble are going to be 13, 14, 15, 16. So, yeah.
And you're saying there will be very little difference between team 12 and team 17, 18,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There might be a little difference between team 7 and team 14. It's just we don't know how this committee – is going to react. We all have our opinion of a 11-2 Kansas State Big 12 champion team that has maybe 5 solid top 30-ish wins or top 40-ish wins versus a 3 or 4 loss SEC team that might have 1 bad loss but has some really better wins. You know, how is the committee going to treat that? Are they going to be spooked by a 3rd loss? Or a 4th loss, even by a team, like I said before the season, with Georgia's schedule. Now, Ole Miss hasn't turned out as good as we thought, but with Georgia's road schedule, in addition to playing Tennessee at home, you know, if they lost three games, they would probably still be a college football playoff team. So that's what's going to be fun, is the obviously the debate, but just how the committee will treat all these teams and these different resumes. And there's going to be a lot of pushback from the non-SEC Big Ten leagues and schools, because, you know, like I said, the top teams in the Big 12 appear to be separating themselves, where I thought it was going to be just a big group of 8-4-ish teams. Well, it looks like Kansas State and BYU are kind of separating themselves there, or in Iowa State, excuse me. So, yeah, to your point, it's just it's going to be a mess, and it's going to be hard to differentiate the two teams, because, like, college basketball, there's, what, 38 games or whatever in your regular season? You got 12 games. There's just really not as many data points.
That's going to be very interesting. LSU at Texas A&M, massive game in the SEC, because the winner, this is the way around having to throw yourself at the mercy of the committee, is to get to the SEC championship game and win it, and you get a bye if you win that game. So the winner of this game would be at least having an inside track for the moment.
Yeah, I'm going to counter that by saying that I've heard a lot of debate lately now. What if you are in the SEC championship game or the Big Ten championship game and you lose that game? Do you get penalized for making the conference championship game?
That is a great question, and not everybody will agree on the answer to that question.
And it's not what they want. I mean, there's no way that's a good thing in a sport which
it'll be great for the winner, but the loser is the one that could be in jeopardy of falling back, what you're saying.
There's no scenario in college, in sports, where you should want to finish third in a conference standings as opposed to second, that it's better for you. It's just not like, then why? I know they hold the conference championship games for money, but like, what's the point of a conference championship game if you'd rather finish third than second? So, but to your point, yeah, I mean, these are two teams that we kind of had in that second tier heading into the season. They just keep winning games. LSU's kind of figuring it out. They're getting better on defense. Texas A&M has been very impressive. They survived the quarterback injury to Wegman. He's playing really well coming back. We knew they were really good on the defensive front. So it's going to be a really fun game where, you know, it's always a good rivalry game. They've played for years, but I don't think any of us had the LSU A&M game circled as, you know, potentially a settling maybe one of the teams for the conference championship game.
It's a big one. It's so much fun that Army and Navy are both undefeated. Now Navy gets a shot to host Notre Dame. What do you think their chances are?
What I always worry about whenever Army and Navy, when they're good and they play a team with the type of talent, is just getting overwhelmed at the line of scrimmage. We know how the option's difficult to defend. We know all that stuff. But just sometimes they show up, we think it's going to be a game, and then whether it's Notre Dame or anybody, if they play discipline, if they play like they're supposed to play, the stuff just doesn't work. And that's my fear for Army. Navy's played a more difficult schedule to date. Army, really credit them for beating the you-know-what out of everyone, but they really have not been tested yet. So I'm worried for Army that they're just going to get overwhelmed by the talent on the line of scrimmage. Notre Dame's very good defensively.
All right, I asked this in the big picture, and this is not the Clark. I would never ask Clark Lee this question, Mitch.
Okay.
I'm curious. Okay, Vanderbilt, a good win at Kentucky on the heels of the win against Alabama. I think everybody for Vanderbilt would be looking at this game this weekend and say, okay, if they pull another incredible upset, that would be awesome. If they don't beat Texas, right, they have to find another win on a very difficult schedule. They have a tough schedule. Yep. Auburn is a 2.5-point dog at Kentucky this weekend. Vanderbilt goes to Auburn. What do you think right now the line would be on that game?
Before seeing, obviously, what happens in these two games this weekend, I would say Auburn by 3.5.
So I just don't want the Vanderbilt fans to be shocked if they are an underdog at Auburn, because Auburn's 2-5 and 0-4 in the league, but Auburn is still bringing some stuff to the table. See what I'm saying? Do you think people, that will look like an odd line if that's the case?
Especially, well, Vanderbilt probably won't be ranked if they lose this game, even if they play well. It's just the way the rankings work. So you'd have a team that was just ranked this week playing a team that could be 0-5 in the league, or 1-4, 1-4, whatever, they're 0-4 now. Auburn's a player, like a lot of teams, they're a player or two away from being 2-2 in the league. And it's just betting lines are set based on public perception as much as actual what's expected to happen, because they're trying to get 50% of the money on each side there. So that's a very good question. I could be way off, but that's kind of my initial thought.
All I'm saying, it's no gimme, right? They'll just go down and beat Auburn. Like, I think Vanderbilt fans know better, but I think the casual fans who are watching,
they better know better.
Well, they need to play well every week and give themselves, they've got to win another game or two to really cap off what is already a memorable season and a huge momentum boost for Clark Lea and the program.
Guys, what I'm hearing is Willie's suggesting Vanderbilt should, like, rest Diego Pavia for the Auburn.
Basically, yeah. Let's rest him. Let's sit him out for the Texas game and get him ready for the Auburn game.
And by the way, Vanderbilt, according to ESPN, has the 8th hardest remaining strength of schedule in the country. Yes, 8th.
Right, and they've already played some tough games, too. So, it was. I remember real quick, guys, I know I had a friend in from out of town who hadn't been to Nashville basically since my wedding. And I was just walking around Vanderbilt's athletics facilities this summer, because I remember it was like 100 degrees. And we walked by, like right in McGugan, whatever, they have the schedules, the football schedules, like just in huge board or whatever. He looked at this and he just shook his head. He's like, oh my, like, good luck with that, buddy. I just remember him saying like that.
Mitch Light of The Athletic joining us as he does every Wednesday to talk college football. Mitch, thank you for joining us. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Yep. Mitch Light joining us, by the way, in terms of 1 through 8, hardest remaining strength of schedule in the country, according to ESPN. Florida, 1. Kentucky, 2. Oklahoma, 3. Washington, 4. Nebraska, 5. Purdue, 6. Michigan, 7. Vanderbilt, 8.
True.
So Vanderbilt has the 8th remaining strength of schedule, hardest strength.
Damn, you should have beat Georgia State.
God. Well, that's
game will loom. That game will loom large. Yeah. We shall see. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Titans. We've seen DeAndre Hopkins out the door. We've seen Ernest Jones out the door. So the natural question is, who's next? We'll discuss that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.